A federal court clears the relocation of Florida's Bay County Airport. Alaska Airlines will investigate flap issues with its 737s. And mature airline pilots fight back against discrimination by Congress. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, January 30th, 2008. Officials of the Panama City Bay County International Airport and Industrial District announced on Tuesday the U.S. Second Circuit Court of Appeals has cleared construction for the relocation of the Panama City Bay County International Airport onto property donated by the St. Joe Company. As ANN reported last week, airport neighbors allowed residential encroachment that prevented runway expansion that was needed for viable commercial operation, then fought attempts to move the airport to a new location where that expansion would be possible. Airport proponents fought three organizations in court to start construction of the new 1,300-acre facility. The airport was approved by the FAA for a $72 million airport improvement grant last May and got its final sign-off from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in August. At that point, it was set to become the first new commercial airport built in the U.S. in a decade. The court heard oral arguments on the merits of the protesters' requests for a stay of the construction on January 23rd. The three-judge panel ruled in favor of the airport authority. After three emergency landings in 3 weeks, on Monday, Alaska Airlines announced it will inspect its 40-plane fleet of Boeing 737-400s for possible problems with flap deployment. The Seattle Post-Intelligencer reports three incidents on January 11th, 20th, and 26th involved two 737-400 combis. A combi is a 737 modified to carry both passengers and cargo. In all three incidents, the flaps failed to fully deploy on landing. One of the flights had to divert to an airport with a longer runway. Inspection of the entire 737-400 fleet is expected to take 2 weeks. Airline spokesman Paul McElroy says Alaska won't ground the planes. Quote, "This aircraft is certified to land with the flaps fully up. It's not preferable, but it could, and flight crews are trained for that." Unquote. Five of Alaska's 40 737s are combis. It's not known whether the problem is limited to the combi fleet. When Congress last year finally got around to addressing the plight of healthy, qualified pilots being forced to retire from the airlines at age 60, the so-called Fair Treatment for Experienced Pilots Act made it past both houses and President Bush in just 3 days. Now, 3,000 older pilots who are still without jobs say the word fair has no place in the name of that law. In a concession to the Airline Pilots Association, the law was drafted to discourage pilots already forced to retire, but not yet 65, from returning to the airline workforce. While it did not prohibit airlines from hiring them back, it stipulated that they would have to return stripped of their seniority. Given the drastic cut in wages that would result and the drop to the bottom of schedule, route, and vacation bidding, that made the proposition a non-starter for pilots who in some cases had already spent decades working their way up to the top of their profession. A particularly sore point with the older pilots is a provision of the bill which bars pilots from seeking redress in court. Lou Tetlow of the Senior Pilots Coalition complains, quote, "I just don't see how Congress can do that," unquote. Tetlow, who lives in New Hampshire, was forced to retire himself in May last year from U.S. Airways. He tells the Kansas City Star he now spends 100% of his workdays leading efforts to get that new law thrown out. The co-pilot of an Air Canada flight from Toronto to London is now hospitalized in Shannon, Ireland, after suffering what has been termed in news reports a nervous breakdown. The Globe and Mail reports flight AC-848, a Boeing 767-300, was an hour out from London on Monday when, as related by Shannon International Airport spokesman Eugene Pratt, quote, "The captain advised air traffic control that he was going to divert to Shannon due to a crew member being unwell. This was just a diversion, a medical diversion," unquote. The Irish Independent reports the co-pilot was admitted to the psychiatric unit of an area hospital after being forcibly removed from the plane by crew members and an off-duty officer with the Canadian Armed Forces. 149 passengers continued on to London with a replacement flight crew after an 8-hour delay. Up next on ANN, investors want Boeing's CEO to commit to a Dreamliner timetable. A safety program at American Airlines may fall victim to labor squabbles. And if Delta merges with a rival, what happens to the leftover executives? You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for January 30th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. That's A-E-R-O. I'm Paul Plack. Despite record sales and a years-long production backlog, Boeing has seen its stock price drop 20% in New York Stock Exchange composite trading since the October 10th announcement that the 787 Dreamliner would be delayed. It probably comes as little consolation that Airbus is down 23% in the same period, or that stock markets in general have fallen. Some industry analysts believe regaining investor confidence in the development of the composite Dreamliner, which is the hottest-selling new airliner ever, is key to regaining the company's stock price momentum. They expect that when Boeing announces its sixth straight profitable quarter today, just as important will be assurances from Chief Executive Officer James McNerney that the company has a handle on the timetable for the 787 program. Michael Merlizzo, an aviation consultant at G2 Solutions in Kirkland, Washington, told Bloomberg whatever Boeing is telling prospective customers must be credible because Dreamliner orders keep on coming. Quote, "They just need to reassure the crowd they have complete control." He adds, "The problem is sometimes what you tell your customers, you can't tell Wall Street." Unquote. A program called ASAP, which stands for Aviation Safety Action Partnership, has since 1994 provided American Airlines pilots amnesty from company and FAA discipline when they voluntarily report safety-related incidents for investigation. The program's success has inspired other airlines to initiate similar plans, and American's mechanics and dispatchers now have similar programs. But now, ASAP's renewal on February 7th is uncertain due to a dispute between the airline and its pilots union. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram reports the Allied Pilots Association alleges that in some cases, the company has unfairly disciplined pilots, even when an incident was accepted for review under the program. That, they argue, has made the pilots wary of participating and could eventually increase chances of safety breakdowns. American tells the paper such cases make up only about 2% of all ASAP incidents reported, and that of all the incidents in question, there were only 5 pilots disciplined. And in each of those cases, says the carrier, that discipline was limited to a letter placed in each employee's file, where it was to be removed and destroyed after 2 years. Tom Westbrook, the union's vice president, stresses that the ASAP program issue is separate from difficult negotiations currently underway for a new pilot's contract. The current union leadership won election based on a promise to work aggressively to restore the pilot's profession in America, including substantial wage increases to return inflation-adjusted pilot salaries to levels of the early 1990s. Former Delta Airlines CEO Gerald Grinstein built solidarity with his workforce during the carrier's bankruptcy by rallying them to fight a hostile takeover attempt by U.S. Airways. After stepping down following Delta's emergence from Chapter 11, he was replaced by former Northwest Airlines CEO Richard Anderson, who wasted no time in pursuing a merger with American or Northwest. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution notes that while nobody involved with the talks has publicly confirmed a merger is in the works, analysts and pundits consider it inevitable, and boldly note that Anderson and other Delta executives have been working 14-hour days to speed a merger through. The paper estimates a combined Delta-Northwest would have a market value of about $8.5 billion based on Friday closing prices. The push to get a deal done quickly does not surprise Anderson's staff. In a memo to his senior staff shortly after becoming CEO, he wrote, quote, "Speed wins. Be decisive and do not delay. Speed and execution is the difference between success and failure," unquote. As much as the execs at Delta and Northwest would like to get a merger done, there may be a problem. The Minneapolis Star Tribune reported Thursday that merger talks have stalled over who would run the combined company, citing unnamed people familiar with the talks. The Detroit Free Press reports that in an interview, Roger King, analyst at Credit Sites Incorporated in New York, theorized Delta CEO Richard Anderson, who headed Northwest from 2001 to 2004, probably would become CEO of the merged carrier. But he added, quote, "Northwest probably disagrees," unquote. One of Anderson's lieutenants at Northwest was Doug Steenland. Steenland is now Northwest's CEO. Still ahead, passenger volume is set to explode at Stewart International. President Bush signs a bill to dry up the supply of spare Tomcat parts. And states consider their own individual passenger bills of rights. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, January 30th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. While the U.S. Department of Transportation mulls alternatives for reducing the growing delays at major New York airports, the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey has a bold plan of its own. The port says it will spend $500 million over the next decade to turn Stewart International Airport, which is a former Air Force base west of Newburgh, New York, into a state-of-the-art reliever airport handling millions of passengers every year. Stewart's longer runway, 927, is 11,817 feet long. That's long enough for the shuttle. Its location, more than 60 miles from New York City, includes four times the land area of LaGuardia, allowing plenty of parking, expansion, and whatever terminal space might be necessary. Anthony Shores, executive director of the Port Authority, told the New York Times recently, quote, "Stewart can be kind of a beacon for a lot of things, an anchor for growth in the Hudson Valley, a major reliever of the other airports, a cargo and job-generating facility for a new economic growth pattern, and a demonstration of the potential for sustainable development in aviation." Stewart International has certainly taken on the look of an up-and-comer. There's a new exit off Interstate 84 with a wide access road to the airport's 350 new parking spaces. The port projects 900,000 passengers will use Stewart in 2008, triple the volume of just 2 years ago. Passengers and airlines have expressed appreciation for the lack of congestion, which Shores says will be a major selling point in his efforts to bring more international flights to Stewart. All the while, nearby, boarded-up military barracks still stand as a reminder of just what a difference a few years can make. Acting on pressure from Congress to keep leftover F-14 Tomcat parts from falling into enemy hands, on Monday, President Bush signed legislation prohibiting the Pentagon from auctioning off those parts. A year ago, the Defense Department announced it was suspending the sale of all F-14 parts after reports that Iran, the only country still operating F-14s and now openly hostile to the U.S., was able to procure spare parts originally sold through Pentagon auctions. Despite that ban, an investigation by the Government Accountability Office revealed that the DOD still allowed 1,400 parts from other aircraft, but which were interchangeable with F-14 parts, to be sold in February last year. It's not clear whether any of those parts actually made it to Iran. Museums and historical groups hoping to display and even fly F-14s were afraid the ban would also cut them off for needed parts. The bill signed Monday allows U.S. museums to buy F-14s or parts for them, but nothing deemed militarily sensitive, and the jets will have to be rendered useless for military purposes. The U.S. airline industry says it will fight what appears to be an eruption of passenger rights laws at the state level. New York's law took effect earlier this month. Washington State and six others are considering similar passengers' rights laws. The Everett Herald reports Washington's law would require airlines to provide a few basic services if passengers were stuck on the tarmac at airports in that state more than 3 hours. Among the requirements would be food, drinking water, fresh air, medical attention, and lights. There are also provisions for a $1,000 per passenger fine and a 150% ticket refund in the case of excessive delays or strandings. Washington State Senator Ken Jacobson, a Seattle Democrat, is pushing the bill after his own experience sitting in an airplane for 4 hours. Quote, "Right now, airline passengers have no rights. I suspect I'm not the only American who doesn't like the way they're generally treated by the airlines," unquote. But David Castlevetter, a spokesman for the Air Transport Association, complains, quote, "You cannot have a hodgepodge of regulations state by state and expect a carrier to be able to comply on a state-by-state basis," unquote. As ANN has reported, Congress is approaching the issue within the context of funding for the Federal Aviation Administration, which oversees all U.S. airspace, airports, and airlines. And finally, barely 24 hours after a Southwest Airlines 737 slid off a snow-covered taxiway at Spokane International Airport on Sunday, one law firm was already hard at work promoting itself to any would-be litigants. None of the passengers or crew aboard the airliner were injured in the slow-speed incident, and as of Monday evening, the FAA had not issued a preliminary report. But Kreindler and Kreindler LLP wasn't waiting for any such formalities. Quote, "Southwest flight crews have a history of undertaking similarly risky aircraft operations. This is at least the fourth instance where a Southwest jet has overrun a runway or ran off a taxiway in just the past few years. It continues to raise serious safety concerns about Southwest's operations and culture," unquote. The most famous of the overruns happened December 8, 2005, when Southwest Flight 1248 overran a snow-slicked runway at Chicago's Midway Airport. That plane ran off airport grounds and hit a car, killing 6-year-old Joshua Woods. To date, that is the carrier's only fatality in its nearly 37-year history. Kreindler and Kreindler client Jim Chalupski, described in dramatic fashion by the law firm as a survivor of that Midway accident, is quoted in the firm's press release asking, "When are they going to learn?" That rhetorical question comes as the aviation industry wonders the same thing about law firms, which seem to have no problem launching lawsuits before incident causes are determined. Excuse me, but did anyone catch the license plate number on that ambulance? And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, I'll talk with ANN Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell about the FAA's new training requirements for pilots flying the Mitsubishi MU-2. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.